Welcome to SwissInfo.ch's programme for November the 23rd. I'm Scott Capper in Bern. This week saw the mega merger of commodities trader Glencore and mining specialist Xstrata. Shareholders of the Swiss-based companies approved the transaction at two separate meetings in Zug. The deal was also given the go-ahead by European Union regulators, although the new entity will have to shed some activities. The deal, which took over a year to reach its conclusion, creates a new firm with around 130,000 employees, projects in 33 countries including 100 mines, and an annual turnover of approximately $70 billion, or 66 billion Swiss francs if you prefer local currency. But in the biggest scheme of the commodities market, just how significant is the deal? That's the question I put to Swiss Info business correspondent Matthew Allen.
Well, what's been happening in the commodities industry over the last few years is that traders have been taking a particular interest in the extraction industry. In other words, companies like Glencore have been buying concessions in certain mines around the world in order to gain access to the physical commodity that they're extracting. Now, what they've done now is actually got their hands on a large-scale mining operation called Xstrata, which has raised stakes somewhat. And what this does, it almost creates a sort of a little mini-monopoly on not just the trading of the raw materials, and Glencore has a monopoly on such metals as zinc and copper, but also the extraction, which means that they can actually save costs. They can put the two things together in what they call a vertical integration, and they can save costs and control both the extraction of the commodity out of the ground and sell it on the open market. That gives them a great scale of cost and would some people think give them certain monopolies on certain commodities.
How difficult was it to actually get this merger completed, or at least approved by shareholders?
Well, first of all, they needed the money to get this deal done. And what Glencore had to do to get the money was go to the market. So they listed themselves about 18 months ago on the London and Hong Kong stock exchanges and attracted such big shareholders as the Qatari Sovereign Wealth Fund and other very large institutional shareholders. They got the money and then proposed a deal, but then they ran into a hitch. The shareholders who they were borrowing the money off objected to several items of this deal. Most prominently, the deal said that Xstrata executives would get multi-million dollar retention bonuses to keep them on board once the two companies were merged. Now, that caused a lot of confusion and a certain amount of anger with the shareholders, and all through the summer, there was a lot of negotiation. Glencore had to up their offer to keep them happy. But in the end, what happened was the shareholders approved the deal, but they didn't approve this compensation package, which is going to lead to speculation that several Xstrata executives will probably leave in the next few months because they haven't got the money they wanted. So it drew the whole thing out, but it looks as if it's going ahead, but at what cost we don't know.
Now, given that with the appearance of what we'd call an even bigger commodities giant on the market, are there other companies, we can think of the big mining companies, are they going to be tempted to push even harder for more mergers?
I was speaking to several experts at the beginning of the week, asking them exactly this question. And the answer is, I'm sure several companies would like to do such a thing, but let's not forget that Glencore couldn't do this without going public, without listing themselves. And in the commodities world, they don't like this too much because they don't like the public probing into their books and their methods too much. And so to raise the type of colossal sums needed to make this kind of deal would probably be beyond most of the other commodities companies. They'll probably carry on just buying up small concessions, little small mines here and there. No one seems to see which of the other big competitors to Glencore can actually pull such a thing off. But you never know. We might see other companies go to the markets for money and try to keep up. But at the moment, it doesn't look as if that's probably going to happen.
And that was Swiss Info business correspondent Matthew Allen speaking there. If you're lucky, your pension fund has invested in the commodities sector, one that has been making money hand over fist. But this has not been the case for many people in recent years, with pension funds often struggling to keep their heads above water. At the same time, a growing aging population is putting the government pension scheme, the first pillar of the Swiss retirement system, under pressure as well. To counter this double whammy in retirement benefits, Swiss Interior Minister Alain Berset has put forward a series of proposals to be discussed by Parliament. These include increasing the retirement age for women to 65, making earlier retirement more complicated, allowing people to work longer, and increasing employee and employer contributions to the pension system. The plan has not been met with general applause, though, and politicians from all sides have found something to complain about, be it about increasing retirement age or putting more money into the pot. But whether they like it or not, there's no escaping the changes sweeping Europe, as Astrid Stückelberger, a specialist on ageing at Geneva University, explains.
28 countries on 34 are actually planned, already has started to plan a new retirement age or are considering it. And it's clear that by the year 2050, most countries will maybe be even above 65-year age of retirement. So this is really totally in the context of policy. You see that in the 1990s, the big trend was to go into early retirement. So most countries in the European region, except Switzerland, who was always the wise and waits for what other people do, most countries in the European region had really encouraged early retirement. Then what they have seen, and the result was that the economy was not getting better, and it was not boosting the economy, so they said, this is the wrong calculation, let's put everybody on post-retirement and encourage them to work. So that's really a new trend today, and Switzerland is following it very smartly, and I think this is a very big progress.
Now, one of the big discussion points with this proposal is to increase the age of retirement for women to 65. Given that women carry a lot of the burden also at home, is this a fair move?
There are two aspects. One aspect to make an equality age retirement man-woman is that if you consider the point of view of life expectancy, women all over the world, except in the sub-Saharan region, live much longer or longer than men. And even in Switzerland, there is still about 4 to 5 years of difference where women are die later. So if you take that logic, women should work longer. Now, if you take the logic of the life course and the active and activities and professional activities in the life course, then you are considering another aspect and another perspective where women have a very different life course than men because they raise still children and are still staying at home. And there you have to actually face another perspective. It's inequality of income between men and women because women work informally raising children and not and men go out and work. So my point is that if Monsieur Berset is putting this motion ahead and this is now a decision, well, we have to also consider cohesion in the equality between men and women before and in the income that they will get in the pension system.
One of the other points is to discourage people from taking early retirement. You're saying that in a lot of countries this didn't really work out as planned, that they didn't provide any boost to the economy. Is that the only reason for pushing back early retirement?
Pushing back early retirement is also that the more the people work and the longer they work, the more they contribute to the pension system. So it's better that people work longer because they will not pump the system, but they will provide to the system. That's one point. The other point is that instead of going to get migrants, you can keep people working longer. The only obstacle is that older workers cost more than younger workers. So in the research they did, they saw that even putting older worker in early retirement, you do not replace him because his skills are very specific and you cannot replace that. So in fact, that is quite a positive result to say that older workers do have specific skills. You maybe have to do continuous education, maybe do more work mobility within an enterprise, make more and incentives for health in the enterprise, so where there is a win-win situation for the employee and the enterprise. If everybody is healthy, the enterprise is healthy, there is less absenteeism, and there is a better economy and healthier economy of the enterprise and of a country.
And that was Astrid Stuckelberger, a specialist on aging at Geneva University. Sticking with big ideas, plans for a giant watch have surfaced in Neuchâtel. If the early stage project was to go ahead, a watch-shaped construction visible from passenger jets flying over Switzerland would be built on the shores of Lake Neuchâtel. The building, which would have nothing to do with tourist traps such as big bananas or giant lobsters seen around the world, would include the world's biggest functioning watch, a concert hall, a congress centre and a hotel, all at a cost of 350 million Swiss francs. Its backers, which include the cantonal government and watchmakers, say the project is designed to bring back some of the vibe felt during the last national exhibition in 2002, which was held partly in Neuchâtel, but also to highlight the region's biggest asset, according to Pierre-Yves Sandeau.
We've been reinventing watches for the past 150 years, and our region is home to most of Switzerland's biggest watchmakers. But we don't have an international profile. The project came from there, with us saying, why not build something to showcase the watch industry, our know-how, and our heritage? It's an important heritage for Canton Neuchâtel, with one in five people working in the watchmaking industry, and a symbol of our identity.
The project is already facing a first hurdle. The city of Neuchâtel has rejected it so far, saying the proposed site for the watch arena, close to the centre of town, is already slated for another, more sustainable development. Olivier Arny is the city's director of urbanism.
We recognise the ambitions of the project, but its impact would be way too large. We would rather develop a form of infrastructure that is accessible to the entire population, something like a small version of New York's Central Park.
For Sandor, the city's refusal doesn't mean the project is dead yet, and if necessary, could always be moved to another site or another town. But he would prefer to keep it in Neuchâtel if possible.
You have to realize the importance of the symbolism. A building that size will benefit an entire region. The whole canton works for the watchmaking industry, but also the whole Jura mountain region. Biel, Porrentruy, and Delémont to the north are as much part of it, as is the Joux Valley to the south. Everyone earns their living the same way in this region. If we chose Neuchâtel, it's mainly because it's centrally positioned. We are 123 kilometers from Basel and 129 from Geneva, so it's ideally placed.
And that was Pierre-Yves Sandeau, one of the promoters of the Swiss Watch Arena in Neuchâtel. And that's all we have time for this week. To take you to the end of our program, here's Clocks by Coldplay. And for all the latest Swiss news, don't forget to check out the swissinfo.ch website. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Scott Kappa.